My wife would like a whole new KG.
I'm assuming we're discounting magic.
I want to have what they're having, whatever that is. That's
right. Yeah. Give me some of that.
Welcome to Leadership Decanted, where we engage with the latest thinking on all things leadership, and we keep the conversation going over a nice bottle of wine.
KG, great to see you again.
What's happening, Paul? It's good to see you. And I'm excited again because we are back together and yeah. We've got the wine.
We've got the wine. And we have the guest all in the same room.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
And a great guest. And this is why we're hanging out. So
that's it.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And look, I feel like we're really mining the riches of Australia's own organizations that really do this well. This whole thing about leadership development, training, coaching, all of that. We've got the cream of the crop, and we've had them here, and we have another one.
Yes, I think we are on top of our game.
That's it.
You know, at least. But the problem
is, have we hyped them up enough?
We have. Okay. And the problem is, where do you go from here?
But I can tell you where we go, KG. Straight to the wine.
Yes.
We go straight to the wine. Today's beautiful, beautiful, delectable nectar of the gods is a Plantagenet Pinot Noir.
Wow. And say that again. What?
Thank you. Thank you for making me say that again. Well, I say Plantagenet.
Plantagenet. Okay.
Yeah, because it looks French.
It may not be,
but it's not French. It's actually an Australian wine.
Somebody will have to correct this.
Yeah, this Pinot is from Western Australia. It's okay. Mount Barker. I love Western Australian wines. You may or may not remember.
I do.
A Pinot from Western Australia can have various different characteristics. I think I've had this one before. I didn't keep any wine notes. I'm tasting notes. I'm sorry about that. I think this is fruity, light, a bit more strawberry, a bit more cherry. But we're about to find out.
Yes, let's be the judge.
Shall we?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Excited.
I still prefer cork. We'll give some to our guest who's remained very silent thus far.
Yes.
Oh, look at that. It's very light. Very light in colour. Okay, I understand this is not a visual medium, listeners, but it's pouring and it's looking pretty good. What do you think?
It's nice. I don't think we've had a bad one yet, so it's all right.
There is cherry there. There's dark fruit. It smells a little savoury on the nose. Do you think it's a little bit of like, is it a mushroomy thing or a...
Mushroom is not what I would have described, but that's all right. I like
a little bit of everything. Yeah. And now, without introducing them, I wonder what our guest thinks of wine.
I really enjoy it.
That's it.
Yes.
That's what we want.
I'm a Pinot man.
How does it rate in terms of your experience of Pinot?
Well, it's actually, I would say it's quite fruity. Like if you compared it to, say, a Central Otago Pinot, it's fruitier than that. It's got a more sharper acid to it, but
there you go.
Pleasant.
Pleasant. It is clean.
Clean, yes, cleans. Cleans the word.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Excellent. Slange. You have heard the voice. Now hear the name.
And I must say, it's a good voice.
It's a voice. It's a voice for radio. So, welcome to our show, Rob Barmer.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And KG, thank you so much for having me.
Excited. If we had sound effects, we'd have applause right now.
That's right, exactly.
You're just sweet-talking devils, I tell you, the two of you. I picked that up right from the word go.
Yeah, I thought you might, yeah.
I'm loving it.
It could be the wine talking already.
Well, just a couple of sips, that's all it took.
Yeah. We often say we can't be held responsible what we say after the first 20 minutes.
As a fan of this podcast, of the Leadership Decanted podcast, I've listened to, well, probably all of the ones I could get a hold of.
You're flattering us now.
Doing good.
I know how it goes. So
a quid pro quo.
I love the way towards the end of these podcasts it just gets really relaxed.
Really loose.
Yes. And the true information starts
and
coming
out.
And
you hear my slurring starting, yes.
I think it's a wonderful concept.
Now, for listeners who aren't familiar with Rob, he is the executive chairman of Executive Central and also an executive coach himself, deep, extensive experience in the corporate world, having been company director, CEO in the past, but you've been doing the Executive Central gig so to speak, for over 20 years now.
Yeah, well, Executive Central itself started in 2004.
Yes, and you're one of the co-founders also.
Yes. So myself and I believe we've had Renee Mathis.
Had the lovely Renee with us.
Oh, I can tell you some home truths there.
Let's wait till the second glass, shall we?
Let's wait until we get on the second glass. No, Renee Mathis and Glenn Ball.
Yes.
The three of us were the founding partners of Executive Central, along with two other gentlemen, who Jeff Jarrett, who still coaches with us these days, and another gentleman, Peter Fitzgerald, who was based in Victoria. So we were the five founders back in 2004.
Wow.
And for 3 years prior to that, I was also in the executive coaching industry working for a company called the Stevenson Partnership, because my coach, the fellow who'd been my coach, was a fellow by the name of Peter Stevenson. So I went and worked with him as my first gig in this space. So, yeah, that's 21 years in total.
Amazing. So let's hear a bit of an origin story then. In what got you into the coaching world?
Mm.
What happened there?
Well,
what trauma did you suffer?
It really came from my own experience of coaching. So the bulk of my corporate career was in a company called Compaq Computers.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, well, people might remember Compaq back in the 90s. It was the number one PC company in the world.
I was too young then to know.
Yes, of course, you wouldn't have. Right. You're probably not even born then.
No, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway, I can tell you a few things about the world
as we go on.
No, so I was very, very fortunate to work for them really right throughout the 90s. It was just one of those serendipitous timing things where I ended up working in that industry at just the right time for it to take off. And in fact, the area of the business that I was asked to come in and start effectively was the consumer business, which was the home PC sort of market. And back in the early 90s, there was no home PC market. So we were there right from the start, introducing computers into the likes of Harvey Norman, Nick Smith and Tandy and all those places that had never really sold computers until that point. And 10 years on, bang, it was just this explosive area. So coming back to the coaching, as often happened in that industry, things happened on fast forward. Growth was really rapid. I got promoted a number of times as the business grew from nothing to something, and eventually got made a director of the business, which to all intents and purposes was like the CEO of the consumer business.
Yeah.
So it was a $350 million-odd business, and I was the ripe old age of 30.
Wow.
Right? Now, you'd think that's not me saying how good I was. That was just saying that's what happened. A lot of people were in that position in the IT industry, very young, rapidly progressed. And so thank goodness for me, at the same time as making me that director, they also appointed an executive coach to work with me.
Right.
Oh.
Now, back then,
that's awfully responsible, isn't it?
It was extremely responsible. But I'd say back then, no one even knew what an executive coach was, certainly not in the IT industry.
No.
I mean, it was really new. And I've got to say, when the HR director told me about it, my immediate response was, oh, well, what would I need that for? You know, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, so you're saying I need
it? What are you saying about me? I mean, it wasn't defensive at all.
No, much. Not at all.
So anyway, this HR director, his name was John Hanley. Subsequently, he went on to into the coaching industry himself years later. But I'll say John's name because he was a great HR director. And he was very good at dealing with, very high energy, high spirited people like myself at the time, right? And he said to me, so Rob, well, okay, you're a big fan of tennis, aren't you? And I said, yes, I love my tennis. I'm come from a tennis family. He says, all right, well, who's the number one tennis player in the world at the moment? And I had to think about it. I said, oh, it's Pete Sampras, who's the American number one player in the world at the time. And he says, oh, so does he have a coach? And I immediately went,
I got it.
Now I get it. So I thought, if the number one tennis player in the world
still
can have a coach, he still needs a coach.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? And straight away, it reconfigured my thinking about that, because at the end of the day, it's not about remedial or fixing what's wrong with you. Yeah. It was about supporting you and taking someone who they obviously thought had some talent and put into a big role, but helping me be the best I could be.
Yeah.
So I bought that straight away. It was great. And I can tell you right from the word go, that coaching experience, and my coach's name was Peter Stevenson, it was the best development I had ever done by a mile. And the main reason I would say for that was it was totally bespoke to my needs.
Yeah.
It wasn't some generic leadership course, you know, and we all know that about coaching. But really, I just found straight away it was zeroed in on what I needed, and he was so helpful. And particularly as I went into that role, I started to realise all of the things that I didn't know. You know, of course, when they gave you the role, you think, yes, no problem, I've got this. This will be no problem, 10 foot tall and bulletproof, until you start dealing with some stuff that you haven't had to deal with. And, gee, it was helpful to have this very seasoned, experienced coach there, not to tell me what was right or wrong, but just to go, okay, well, that's one way you could do it. Let's maybe just explore a couple of other options.
Mm.
Or let's see if there's another way you could think about it. And I would say, as a result of that, he very much helped me avoid a number of landmines that I would have otherwise stood on.
Yeah.
Helped me really work with my strengths.
Yep.
But also just be aware of the consequences of maybe overdoing some of those strengths from time to time.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was so valuable. It was brilliant. So fast forward about 4 years, I ended up, after yet another major restructure, I took a redundancy from Compaq because they restructured the whole business overnight and I called him up and said, hey, I better come and talk to you. I've just accepted a redundancy. I need to think about what I'm going to do next. And I went over and saw him a couple of days later, and he said, look, before we talk about anything else, I'd really like you to think about coming and running my business, because I think you'd really do that well, and I think you're very passionate about all the things that we're doing. And he was spot on. He was right. I was incredibly passionate about the people side of role. And so I thought about it. I probably took a massive pay cut to do it, but it was getting in on the ground floor of an industry that I thought would be hugely valuable to get into. And, you know, here we are 21 years later.
Look at that.
It was a good call.
Yeah. Very good call. Yeah.
So that's a bit of a long-winded answer, but that's kind of how it happened.
Well, that's a great call, but I'm going to ask you to fast forward 21 years, or maybe 20 years, because you have taken all of that experience, all the knowledge and expertise that you've accumulated over that time, and put it down in a book. So I'm keen to get a feel for what led you there.
Yeah.
And I'm torn in terms of what I'd like to know. Because I've read the book about 1.5 times now, actually, and I'm really keen to know what you didn't include. Because I'm thinking, it's a distillation of a lot of experience, but there must have been a lot of stuff that you've kept out. But we'll talk about that in a minute. What I'm keen to know is, how did you get to wanting or desiring or needing to write a book, and why this one?
Okay.
I haven't told anyone the name yet. Should I tell?
By all means, yes.
So the name of the book, the title of the book is called Quantum Leadership, with the tag Igniting the Limitless Power of People in Disruptive Times.
Wow, it's powerful.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
so,
very powerful.
Well, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the global pandemic for this.
Okay. Because something good came out of it.
Yes. Yeah. So back in 2020, when really the world was in the depths of not knowing what the hell was really going on, and we had lockdowns and all that sort of stuff. So there was that. There was a period of months there, I'd say, let's say from March 2020 through to August, September, where we were all effectively locked down and stuff. I took the opportunity of being sort of locked down in the room to really get into it and get this done. But the reason I wanted to write it, and this perhaps goes to answering your question about what's left out as well, over the 20 years or so that I've been in this game, first of all, I did actually co-author two books with Peter Stevenson, my coach, way back, right? And he was the main author, by all means. But he asked me to co-author and add some practical things into those books. So I enjoyed that experience, and I learned a lot from that. I always remember Peter Stevenson's great advice about writing books, because he'd written a number.
Right.
And he said, the key is just write it, don't get it right. Just get it down and then you refine it. And so many people try and make it perfect as they're writing.
Make it sound perfect as it comes out.
Spot on, KG. Exactly. So I leveraged that very much in writing this book. But the premise for wanting to write this book, I'm a huge fan of a lot of leadership theories and a lot of leadership books. There's lots of fantastic ones out there, and I give them their due. So I'm Good to Great and Emotional Intelligence and the list goes on. Really great books written by wonderful authors. I'm a big fan of those. But it struck me that the topic of disruption has been very close to my heart from the IT days, for example. And I suppose I've seen it consistently in the last 30 years, that disruption is now a constant. Right? Disruption, industries are constantly being disrupted. Organizations even within organization, teams are being constantly disrupted with restructures and things like that. So many times in our work, we're dealing with leaders who talk about, oh, we're just change fatigued and we just would like a bit of a break from change or whatever. And, you know, I listened to another podcast series as well called the Singularity University. I don't know whether you've heard of that, either of you.
But I'm going to check it out
now. Singularity University. Been around for about 10 years, started in the States, but it's all about, they've really identified 8 major areas of disruptive technology, which are disruptive technologies that are advancing at such an exponential rate that essentially, in the theory goes, if it keeps going at this rate, we eventually reach this singularity where there's no problem that can't be solved.
Yeah.
No? Wow. And I kind of love to let my brain wander around that, right? But one of the things that this speaker said on this in this podcast, he said, so many people are change fatigued and concerned about all of the disruption that's going on. And he said, I've got a message for you all. And what I can say to you is that the pace of change will never, ever again be as slow as it is today.
Wow. It's only going forward.
It's only going to get more, right? So
what do you do with that fatigue then? Yes. Where do you put it?
So that kind of said to me, you know, this disruption.
You just got
to
deal with it, right?
And of course, there we were sitting in a global pandemic as well. It's probably the biggest global disruption that any of us have lived in you know, for generations, probably since the World Wars and things. So it struck me to say that we need to think about that from a leadership perspective. And look, good leadership practice that's been written about for a lot of time absolutely has a place. I mean, it has a place, it's vital. But I would say a lot of traditional leadership approaches tend to have a gradual a gradual impact. So if you look at, say, the performance of an organization or the culture of an organization, good leadership can really have an impact on that, but it tends to happen very gradually.
Yes, it's and over time.
Yeah, over time. Yes. Right. And the analogy that I use in the book is it's like a changing tide. Mm. There's a big difference between high tide and low tide. But while it's happening, you almost don't even notice it because it happens over, you know, obviously a period of 6 hours or so, right? Well, that's great, and I'd rather have that than not have it. But sometimes in response to the sort of disruptions and changes that are being foisted on organisations all the time, I think we need a faster response than just a gradual change in performance.
Wow. Yes.
And that's what the book's all about. It's about how do you build on those really positive leadership things that are giving you a gradual change, but how do you supercharge it so that quite literally we haven't got time to wait months to change the performance around or to change. And when I say performance, that could be at an individual level of an individual person, it could be a team, or it could even be an entire organisation. We can't hang around waiting for the tide to change. We've sometimes got to really create this quantum leap in performance, and that's where the name comes from, right? It's a go into the quantum physics side of things there, but it's subatomic particles that have this just instantaneous change of state, which no one can really explain, and that's a separate discussion, but it's a sudden and significant change in the performance, obviously positive, hopefully, that we want to try and excite. So I've written the book around how can you do that? How do you do that to create, whether it's at an individual, team or organisation level, that sudden, significant, positive change in performance and culture?
Right, and is that what you mean by quantum leadership? The ability to activate or excite that change that is responsive in real time.
Correct. Yes.
Right.
So that's probably a nice definition, actually, what you just said. So quantum leadership is really the ability to excite that quantum leap in performance and culture in response to that sort of disruption and change that we're seeing all around.
And you would think that every organization needs that, right? Because no matter what your base is that's growing and that culture thing, there's always going to be things that you have to do instantly to get to the next level or to leap ahead of the competition. So just having those fundamentals and those things that you put forward that let them do that, that's going to be a game changer for people.
Absolutely. And KG, if just building on that, if you look at some of the research around on and the writings around the subject of disruption and disruptive technologies, and I was lucky enough to be sent over to Harvard when I was at Compaq, and I did this wonderful 2-week residential program at Babson University, which is kind of part of the Harvard group. And we had to read 6 books before we even attended the thing. So I'm thinking, my God, you know, this is full on. And anyway, one of those books was called The Innovator's Dilemma, written by a guy called Clay Christensen. He was the guy that invented the term disruptive technology. And when you look at the sort of theory behind that, he uses heaps of examples in different sectors, whatever. But the prevailing technology of the day, right, let's say take he uses memory technology in computers as a very good thing. But, you know, so let's say back in the 60s, people were using magnetic tape as a storage device, right? Yep. And what he would say is that industry would continue to innovate and it would continue to improve, and there'd be this gradual improvement in the magnetic tape technology, and the leaders in the field would be refining, and this gradual change was really awesome. But then along came another technology that just went boom, bang, and just leapfrogged that technology that literally overnight made it redundant.
Yes. Yep.
So it became tapes, and then it became floppy disks, and then it became hard disks, and then it became, you know, and there was this generations of industries that even though they kept gradually improving, they got leapfrogged.
Yeah.
And that's another sort of way I tend to look at this, is you can be doing a wonderful leadership job in your organization and kind of getting a gradual improvement in the performance and culture of the place, and something comes along and just leapfrogs you. And you've got to be able to respond to that. So probably summing that up, I don't in any way say that this, what I'm proposing the book is an instead of.
Mm.
It's more instead of good leadership, this is more an additive. It's like a fuel additive. Yeah, you could put this into your fuel and it'll improve the performance of the engine. Well, yeah, that's what we're talking
about. Does that mean that if you have no other process for improving leadership or improving culture, that this additive, like if you have an empty tank, then fuel additive isn't going to do anything?
True.
So are we saying that, are you suggesting that in and of itself this may not work, but it requires something else to be already present?
So the first part one of the book is what I call quantum foundations.
Mm.
And I could have easily called that leadership foundations.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So what I've tried to do is, out of a very broad array of leadership capabilities and approaches that leaders can use, I've tried to say, if I had to zero in on what are the fundamental things that must be in place, these are them. Right.
Okay.
So in that book, you know, there's nothing new in that, by the way. There's nothing that's radically, you know, new ideas. But I suppose that's come a lot from my coaching experience over the 20 years of working with lots of different people and teams and whatever. Mm. What are the things that continually come up as the foundational pieces that you've got to have in place?
Okay. Right?
So that's why I put that in there. Mm. So I feel like you have to have that as your basic fuel.
Right.
And then you can put the fuel additive in, which is the how you can react to the changes and disruptions using the quantum approach.
Yeah. Right, okay. People will say, look, I get the quantum analogy. However, you know, people aren't hard drives. People aren't tapes. How do you leapfrog when you have this much more complex adaptive organism that we call people?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, so, and that's a really good question, by the way, because we aren't just technologies. We aren't things that have been invented. We are far more complex beasts. Mm. But that's where I think it's useful to say, you know, that the idea of a quantum leap, if I can just stray briefly into the world of quantum physics. Please. Without boring people, right? What's really interesting is that if you take a subatomic particle like an electron or a photon, let's take electrons, they're fascinating things because they can exist at a certain number of energy levels, right? They will only exist at certain specific levels. They won't exist anywhere between. Mm. They'll just exist at those levels.
They're either there or not.
Correct. So it'll be energy level 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, but nowhere in between, okay? What's fascinating is that when energy of some sort is introduced to that electron, instantaneously it will cease to exist at that energy level and instantaneously reappear at a different energy level. Now, the question is, where does it go? The whole world of quantum physics is, it had to go somewhere, didn't it?
Yeah.
But you can't measure its movement. There's no acceleration or momentum or any of the things that you can measure in the physics of normal particles or bodies in motion. So that's what has given rise to things like theories of parallel universes and stuff. It must go somewhere.
Yeah. And it's instant, so you
and it's instant.
You're not traveling there.
It's just bang.
It's moving. Right? Yeah.
So with that, using that metaphor, yes. I sort of thought, well, all right, if electrons exist at certain levels, let's take individuals. Let's, if we just look at people, do they exist at level? And I kind of went, hey, there's actually a really good model that people are very familiar with that kind of talks about the levels that individuals exist at. And I picked on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is, identifies five very specific levels that people can exist at depending on their context and depending on their situation. So I kind of used that as kind of my metaphor for saying, well, let's assume that at any one time, an individual is existing at one of those Maslow levels.
Yeah.
Now, for your listeners who might not be familiar with that, very simply, he talks about the physiological level, which is the bottom level is I'm worried about, do I have air to breathe and can I exist and food to eat and whatever, or am I going to die? So am I going to live or am I going to die?
Mm.
Then the next level up is security needs. Am I safe?
Yeah.
Then the next level up is belonging. Do I feel like I belong to something, like a family or an organization? Next level up is self-esteem. Do I feel like I'm worthy and achieving things in life? And the top level is what they call self-actualization, which is where I am totally comfortable in with who I am and comfortable in my own skin, and I'm now really striving to be all I can be, reach my full potential. Now, please, for the psychologists out there, I've probably just completely, oversimplified and bastardized the Maslow world, so please forgive me. But
that's okay. I was taking notes either way.
Good. But, if you think about that, that's sort of psychological levels of being. Well, the theory of the quantum leadership piece is to say, well, let's say we've got someone existing at one of those lower levels. And I've tried to translate, by the way, those levels into the organizational version.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's say the physiological level, while it's talking about oxygen to breathe and food to eat in Maslow's world, I'm talking about, do people have the basic requirements to be able to do their jobs?
Yes.
Yeah. The basic ingredients to be able to survive and do the actual job they're meant to do, right? That's sort of my organizational equivalent. And security is, do they feel safe and secure in their environment. And that sort of stuff. So I've translated those levels, if you like, into organizational versions.
Yes.
But what I'm really talking about here is, let's say someone's at the second level at the bottom called security. So you've got someone who's, for whatever reason, not feeling secure in their environment. They might be in a team where they don't feel safe to be vulnerable, for example, or to ever make a suggestion because they could get criticized or they could get attacked or whatever the reason is. Their organization is, they don't trust the way the organization is going to, react if things go wrong or something like that. Now, that would have them sitting there at that security level and unable to be at a higher level until those things are dealt with. What I'm suggesting is you can take a person from that level, and rather than just gradually build them up the levels, and I've seen this, and this is kind of what prompted me to try and work out what's happened to make that reality, they literally overnight go from security level to bang, top level.
Wow.
Security, self-actualization. It's like this entire different person just appears in front of you.
Mm.
And you go, how did that happen? What made that happen for that person to have been down at that level and behaving in all of the associated ways of someone who's essentially scared and unprepared to challenge anything or unprepared to take a risk and whatever, to all of a sudden forming at this ridiculously outstanding level and all their strengths start coming out. And all. So what actually happened?
And that's, you want to say, I want to have what they're having, whatever that is.
That's right. Exactly.
Now,
give me some of that.
That's right. So now I'm assuming we're discounting magic.
Oh, it's always a little bit of magic.
So on that assumption, what does happen? What do you talk about in your book that actually activates that type of change?
Okay. So, and this really comes, if you like, to the core premise of the book.
Yeah.
And I've fallen back a little bit on my engineering days. Don't worry, I'm the least engineering type person you're ever going to meet in your life. But in another life, I did electronic systems engineering. And yes, I'll definitely have a refill of that.
There you go.
Fabulous. Thank you, Paul. I sometimes fall back on a mathematical formula to try and explain things about the world.
Oh, right? I love a little bit of math.
A little bit of math, right? So I've kind
just
of...
Just like magic.
Yes, I have the magic of mathematics. I have postulated this quantum equation or the quantum formula for quantum leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it is saying that there are three critical factors that contribute to the level that someone exists at. Now, by the way, we're talking about individuals. We tend to be focusing on an individual level.
Yeah.
You can equally look at this at a team level or even at an entire organizational level.
Nice.
And in the book, I've tried to identify what are the levels that teams exist at and what are the levels that organizations exist at. So, but let's just stick with people for now because that's probably easier to grasp. And the quantum equation basically is saying The three factors you need to consider are capability. Now, what I mean by that is the capability that someone is actually applying in their work to their job. That's slightly different from the capability they may have, but not applying, right?
Yes, so because they are different, yes.
They're quite different, okay? So that C factor is what is the capability that they are currently applying to their job? The next factor is trust. The level of trust that they feel in a number of different ways, but essentially, what's their trust factor at the moment? Do they feel that they can trust the organisation, the people that they're working with, themselves? You know, do they have trust in themselves? There's a number of things that we explore in the book around the issue of trust, but what's their current level of trust? And the third factor is energy, which is what's the energy that they feel or that they have to kind of give to their work?
Oh, okay.
All right. Now, those three things are at any particular time at a particular level, right? So I've got a certain amount of capability I'm applying, I've got a certain level of trust I feel, and a certain level of energy I feel. And essentially the formula says the quantum level equals capability multiplied by trust multiplied by energy. And just for a bit of fun, I have actually squared both the trust factors and the energy factors. So it's capability times trust squared times energy squared. And I explain in the book my reasons for squaring the trust and energy, but let's maybe not go into that too much now because we start getting a little bit too mathematical. But the core idea here is, if you think about that multiplication and squaring effect, you could improve any one of those factors. So let's say good leadership is very good at improving someone's capability.
Right.
So as a good leader, I might, through my delegation or through the coaching that I do with a person, I might improve their capability. If I just do one of those factors, I'm going to get a gradual improvement in that person's performance, say. The idea of this, though, is if I can do something, even if it's just a little thing, to increase each one of those factors, capability and trust and energy at the same time, even if they're just little things, if those changes, those positive improvements happen at the same time, the multiplication and squaring effect creates like this exponential leap in the quantum level, right? So it's the combined effect of doing something to increase C, something to increase T, something to increase E.
Yes.
And that's it. If you do the three at the same time, you get this massive leap. If you do one at a time, you get a gradual change. So I'd say better to do one at a time than to do nothing. But if you want to get a really rapid and sudden significant change, do something. You need to have a plan as a leader to how you're going to increase each one of those factors for that person.
Right. So that suggests to me that taking a step back, there needs to be a certain catalyst in leadership that will enable those three components at once. Many of our leadership development programs, training programs, they might focus on one of those components.
Oh, yeah.
Capability or trust or energy. Don't think I've seen them necessarily or consciously attack all three. So how does a leader or someone who is looking after a team actually prepare to make that even possible? How can they become a catalyst to this?
Okay. So what I'm suggesting is that it is the quantum leader's role to be that catalyst for the person. You know, I'm saying that's a responsibility of a leader. And if you wanted to put it simply, what I would like to see each leader doing, if they're wanting to do this, to have a plan for each person to say, what's my plan to increase C and increase T and increase E?
Yeah.
Those factors. Now, they might be three separate things that I'm trying to do, but I'm trying to do them at the same time. Now, there are a couple of things that I suggest in the book that can be a bit of a jackpot.
Yes.
That can, if you do them well, can potentially increase all three of those factors if you get them right.
Yes.
Right? So, and they're kind of, they're a little harder to do, but and they're not ridiculously hard, but if you can stumble on something that you can do that will increase all three of those factors at the same time, wow, bang, you've got it. But it may not be possible to do that, so I want to be thinking, what is my C strategy for Paul? Now, we can dive into what each I literally, within each of those factors, I've tried to create a menu of options that a leader might consider. There's many things you could potentially do. One thing I'll say about capability is if you want to get a quick change to that factor, find something that they're already good at that they aren't doing, or a strength that they have that they're not employing, and find a way for them to employ that, because you don't need to teach them that new strength. They've already got it.
Just use it.
They're just not using it.
Yeah. Just do it.
I talk about numerous things like that where that will increase the C factor. Now, of course, if you teach someone something new and give them a new capability, that's another way that you could potentially increase the C factor if they then go and apply what they've learned. But the fastest way to do it is to find something they're already good at or the strength they have that they're not actually employing it. So that's the C factor.
Yeah.
Same with T. There's numerous things that I explore in that. How do you improve the trust that someone feels? That can be various things. And same with energy. You know, I'm zeroing in on different strategies that people can use to increase the energy factor. And if you do those and you find what works for an individual, there you go. Bang. That's what'll happen. You'll get a quantum leap in performance.
And how sustainable is that? In other words, does it stick? Does the performance stick? Because traditional training tells us that the gradual incremental strengthening of particular capabilities and so forth, that's what makes it stick. If we are now looking at this sort of quantum leap, this change in state from zero to one, how did we know, or how can we
sustain it?
How did we do that?
Great question. Look, there isn't one answer to that. But a number of things that occur to me are that whatever you do to increase any of these factors, it has to be genuine and it has to be sustainable. So, for example, if I look at the E factor, energy, I have this little, the four M's of energy. I would have liked it to have been the four E's, but I came up with these four M's, right, that people could look at: motivation, morale, meaning, and modelling are my four M's, right? But let's take motivation, right? I might choose to do something that is going to motivate that individual because I'm zeroing in on, you know, giving them the opportunity to do a type of work that really suits their style more than they're currently being able to do. Now, I might do that, and it might give them an immediate energy burst, but if I don't sustain that, if I just send them back to their normal day job, which is a different type of work that's mundane and isn't inspiring for them, I'm going to lose that factor. Whatever I do has got to be something that I can continue and make sure that they get to keep getting exposed, in that example, to that type of work, not just have it as a one-off. So I might get a little spike in performance, but I'll very quickly get a regression if I don't sustain it. Trust even more so. I might do something that increases the trust that person feels, say, in me as their leader. That could be the thing that increases their trust factor. But if I don't sustain that and it's not seen as genuine, well, it certainly won't sustain the quantum leap in performance. They will regress. If you like, some of these quantum foundation concepts are a little bit like the support level that comes in behind anything that you do. So I do this strategy and I support it with this good leadership practice, and then I'll try something else and I support that. It's like I'm putting a support under a higher level.
Right? Yeah, you're scaffolding up.
Yes, exactly. That's the word. I'm scaffolding it. If I'm not scaffolding it with solid leadership practice, it'll be a house of cards and it'll come tumbling down.
And let me just question why capability and energy have the square.
No, trust and energy have the square.
Trust and energy have the square. Okay, so trust and energy have the square.
Yes.
And capability, no square.
Yeah. So my thinking on that one.
Be careful what you ask, KG. We're about to get a lesson in mathematics, I think.
Now, and when you look at the Laplacian transform equation, really what that's about is, apart from the fact that they, in and of themselves, they are very much factors that will increase someone's performance, for a lot of years we've talked about the concept of how do you unlock potential.
Okay.
Right now, this is, and I talk about this in the book as well. If you think about, every human has locked up inside of them potential hasn't necessarily been utilized. And I use the battery analogy. You can have a battery sitting there that's fully charged, but if it's not connected to a circuit, that potential energy is useless.
Yeah.
It's just a lump of metal that's not doing anything in that battle, in that battery. So what we've got to do to unlock potential, we for years used to say the amount of trust and the amount of energy that people felt in their environment would determine how much of their potential they would let out.
Okay.
Because really, the person themselves is the only one that can determine to let their potential out. You can't force it out. You can't extract it out with a needle or anything like that. They've got to feel safe to let their potential out. So the trust and energy, we for a lot of years talked about that as almost the factors that contributed to whether someone was going to let their full potential out. So the reason I've squared it in this equation is that not only do you get the multiplying effect that comes from increased trust and increased energy, you also get the unlocking potential effect from those two things that helps unlock some of that capability, for example, that they might have that they haven't been letting out or they haven't felt safe to let out.
Nice.
So I just was trying to express that when you've got that trust and energy factor working for you, it really does contribute to this exponential effect on the overall performance that someone has and or that a team has or even an organization has. Now, obviously, when you start looking at this from a team and an organizational perspective, it's a little bit of a different lens. Mm. But I'm still saying there are things that you can do as a leader to increase those three factors at a team or an organizational level. And the same effect can happen. You can see a team that goes from being, you know, a dysfunctional, well, not even dysfunctional, just a work group of people that aren't even really a team. They just happen to report to the same person and don't really interact in any way much at all. Overnight, you can almost see them going to being what we'd call a superior team that are way overachieving what the sum of the individual parts could achieve.
Love it.
So when you dive into this, and I suppose in trying to write a lot of this down, it forced me to think back on so many different scenarios that I'd seen where I went, what actually happened there when that team made that just dramatic change? And that's how I kind of came up with trying to codify it. I think this is a pretty good representation of what happens in different ways. So that's where it all came from. Now I'm going to have a sip of my Pinot.
Please do. Well, I'll ask a question while you're sipping. Actually, I have two questions. First question is, it sounds like at the moment, if you have a team or an organization that needs that disruptive energy or that needs something to step them up, we are tasking a particular leader to catalyze that change. For me, that would be a single point of failure, because if that leader goes, then what happens to the team? I'm more interested in whether this could be applied across each individual in that team to catalyze for each other this notion of quantum leadership rather than hoping on the one leader to do that. What do you say to that?
I absolutely agree. And the answer is yes, we can, and yes, we should.
Right.
Like it.
So I'm trying to be very firm on that answer, because it isn't... If you think about it, this is a concept that we talk about in the foundation section of the book. Any single point of failure from a leadership point of view comes from what we call I leadership. When a leader thinks it's about me and it's my responsibility to make this happen and whatever, essentially one of the things they're doing is they're creating that point of failure. They're also creating a big bottleneck in the organization because there's only one of them, right? I could talk about that all day. But in the context of quantum leadership, exactly the same. It is not the responsibility of the leader to be the sole architect of this or the sponsor of this. What the leader's got to do is got to move beyond the I leadership level out to we, which is the team around, how do I make my team the champions of this thinking? And beyond that, out to the you leadership level, which is actually, it's not just about me and my team, it's about everyone that I interact with. All of the stakeholders, whether they're my boss or my peers or other people in the organization, external stakeholders, the you leadership mentality is my job as a leader is to really unlock the full potential of everyone around me. And so when you apply that thinking to the responsibility for creating a quantum leadership environment, if I take a comprehensive look at that and say, my job is to get everyone believing in this. So let's take a team. I talk about the concept of quantum teams in the book, and there's plenty of different concepts that are associated with that, but one of them challenges the traditional structure of teams. So if I can dive into this briefly, just as an example, if you think about the way a team is typically structured, you'll have a leader of the team, and then you have the members of the team, which typically will be responsible for a different function. So say a typical leadership team of someone who's the head of sales and marketing and operations, procurement, or whatever, you know, finance. So they've all got their functional things. Now, in most teams, I would argue that, and I'm probably being generous here, 95% of those individuals' time is spent on leading their function.
Yeah.
And I'm actually being generous to them because I reckon it's probably more like 99.9% of their time is spent running their function, leaving the remaining amount of time, which is not much, to being a leader of that whole business across the business, right? So my view is if you wanted to really embrace this concept of quantum leadership, one of the things that I could be tapping, if I take the C factor for a team, if I could tap into the existing capability that exists in that team to help me in my function. So, for example, the great strengths that the other members of that leadership team have, if I could tap into that to get them to come and help me run my function more effectively, and equally they could tap into my strengths to help them run their functions more effectively, surely that'd be a good way to increase the C factor that I've got access to. Great. But how are you going to make that happen when all of my time is spent down in my function? So I'm suggesting, I think we need to rethink what it is to be a member of a leadership team. Maybe I'm a bit radical, but imagine if 50% of my responsibility was the leadership of my function, and the other 50% was the responsibility to make my strengths and capabilities available to the other functions. And I'm actually measured on this. It's not just doing them a favour occasionally. I have to give priority to that. And I'm also measured on the extent to which I'm tapping into the capability of others to help in my function. So if you made that 50-50, that would then provoke a conversation, well, how on earth am I going to make that time available for all those other functions when I'm flat out already running my own function? Guess what? It's about lifting the capability of your leadership team. And, you know, it's literally bootstrapping everybody up a level. So I've only got 50% to put to that function, so that means I've really got to be lifting the level of capability of my leadership team in that function. So that lifts them up, and they in turn would need, not easy to do, but it's, I think, a fundamentally different view on what it is to be a member of a leadership team and what my responsibilities are. Now, it's interesting, since writing the book, I've had a number of teams that I've been working with that are, you know, executive leadership teams, and I've hit them with this. And, of course, the first time you tell them about it, they're looking at you going, I think he's mad.
Can't be done.
This is ridiculous. But then you start to unpack. Well, let's just imagine this was possible for a moment. And let's fast forward, say we were doing that. What would be different about that state compared to what we're doing now? Just get them to define what the end result looks like. And then they start going, and you go, okay, that would be what it would look like. Well, how could we start to take a step towards that, even a small step from where we are now to that? Before you know it, there's actually a bunch of things that you can do to begin taking very big leaps towards that. And I've had a few CEOs going, you know what, I'm actually going to rewrite the job descriptions of my leadership team members.
Wow.
Because I totally buy this. And in fact, I need their help. I need them giving me more help to be successful as the CEO at my level, as opposed to, well, I'm the boss and they all report in to me.
Everybody's off doing their own thing. Exactly. And that's about it. Yeah.
I'm a single point of failure almost, as we're talking about. I'm not saying it'll happen overnight, but I'm really, particularly in the work I'm doing with teams, I'm just trying to challenge teams to say, there is a different way that we could do this. And the results of doing something like that, if you think for that to work effectively, there needs to be very high levels of trust between the team members. We can't have team members who are competing with each other or trying to one-up each other or anything like that. And there needs to be high levels of energy in the team as well, because that's going to require us to be motivated to get out of our comfortable silo and go into areas that we may be less familiar with. But I tell you what, do it, and it's just a totally different experience.
And that was one of your two questions,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was
one.
Okay, this is my final question. Final question, I realise that our time...
Oh, no, it's not up, is it?
Oh, I know, I know.
You're kidding me.
Okay, final question, maybe. Let's say we have a team that has only just been introduced to even the concept of quantum leadership. They're much more used to that gradual, traditional way of increasing their capability, sometimes their trust, sometimes their energy, but not all at once. How might a team, aside from clearly calling you, calling Executive Central and saying, listen, we need some help, how might they start this journey?
Well, I would say, like any building any structure, you start at the foundations. The reason I've written the quantum foundations part one of the book, is it's really important that everybody gets across those core concepts. Mm. Interestingly, one of those core concepts is that I, we, you leadership framework that I talked about. And just to put that in perspective, that's not, and I'm trying to respect the great leadership theories that are out there.
Mm.
That's our attempt to try and consolidate a lot of the really wonderful thinking that's been done in other leadership models, but to put it into a structure that is easily digestible by busy executives, you know, who aren't leadership theorists. And people do get that model. They can kind of see that really makes sense. And so getting that common language happening is pretty vital to start the journey, because it then starts to paint a picture that says, yeah, we are behaving a bit like we leaders. We're kind of stuck at that we leadership level. there's lots of good things about We Leadership, you know, building teams and building relationships and stuff like that. But if you get stuck at that level, that's where the silo mentality comes in, right? Saying, gee, we're spending all of our time just operating in silos here. We don't do anything across the business. That sort of a model can create the realization that there is a need to do something. It introduces a common language. There's other things. Paul, I know you'll be familiar with some of the work we do in the emotional intelligence space. Mm. Now, again, we've tried to create very practical, pragmatic ways that people can actually improve their emotional intelligence.
Yes.
And put that into practice. I'll say another key one is, it's going to sound very boring, how they organize themselves. You know, a leader has so many things competing for their time and energy.
Yeah.
How I prioritize
yeah.
and get that right. Now, that's nothing new at all. But I tell you what, they might not be new concepts, but the more senior you get in leadership, the more vital they become.
You need to do it, yes.
Right? Now, I say to people, I've been fortunate enough to coach directly a lot of CEOs who are running massive organizations. And people think, oh, gee, their development needs must be in some of those higher order areas around, you know, strategic thinking and innovation and change. And I go, yeah, you know, they want to be doing a whole lot more of that, but you know they can't. And the reason they can't is they haven't got their priority management in order. You know, yeah. they're just struggling Peace. To cope with the scope of everything that's thrown at them. You know, those, I'll call them hygiene things, yes. need to be done. So to answer your question, that's where you need to start.
Mm.
The other thing I would say is, and you get this, hopefully you got it when you read the book, when you look at the options for how you can increase each of those factors,
yes.
there's nothing radical in there. They're not radically new ideas, but it's more about being deliberate about them and saying, right, if I'm thinking about KG, right, as a person who's working in my organization, I need to think, what's my plan around increasing his C factor,
yep.
his T factor, and his E factor? And I think there should be a plan in place for each person. This is what I'm going to do to try and say. Now, I might not get it right. I might pick something off the menu and it doesn't really work. Great, pick something else off the menu. And you keep going, but it's more the fact that you're trying to get each of those done, as I say, yeah. simultaneously, that'll really get you, when you get it right, bang, because you'll know you've got it right because there'll be a whole new KG in front of you. The next time you, that's where you'll see I've got that quantum leap that I was looking for.
My wife would like a whole new KG.
Have I got a book?
Family.
Have I got a book for you?
I've got a book for you. In fact, I might call it domestic quantum leadership.
That's it. I have to say, I can vouch for the fact that the book itself, for every model, for every concept, for every idea, there is a practical outworking. There are several examples, things that you can actually try, you can actually do, not just think about, but put into practice. And I think that's your strength. In this book.
Thanks,
so
nice.
It's really good
Thank
that
you.
Way.
And look, I have to just, in a, also in a further acknowledgement of the pandemic.
Yes.
You know how we all had to scan into places wherever we yes. were going with QR codes and That's stuff right. every time you wanted to go into a restaurant or whatever. Well, throughout the book, what I've done is I've put QR codes in
cool.
each section
yeah.
that people good. Can scan with their phone. And so when you've read a section, you can scan the QR code and get a little video supplementary
yeah.
information.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
They can see your mug on video.
Oh, they get to see me. Oh, how lucky. And they will notice very quickly that I have a great head for radio.
That's it. Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, Rob. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
One thing we haven't done, and I think, KG, it's been remiss of me, is to declare that I do have a connection with Executive Central. I don't think we've done that. Even when we had Renee in the past, I don't think we did that.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you did it now.
Yeah, just so listeners know, I do some work with Executive Central. I think they're a great bunch of people doing amazing things. People like Rob and like Renee, they have so much experience that it would be remiss of us not to tap
not
into
to
that.
Bring them on.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank so you. Thanks, Rob. Well, really appreciate
this. This has been fantastic, Rob.
KG, thank you. It's great to meet you.
So much information. It's great.
Well, look, I genuinely say I've been, when Paul told me about the podcast, and I have listened to all of your episodes, and please keep them coming. They're terrific, and anyone out there listening to them, spread the word, because this is the sort of dialogue that I think needs to happen. And I will just say one other thing, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Is that my view is that executives and people in leadership roles actually get a pretty bad rap out there.
Yeah.
You know, we hear in the media all the time about, oh, these massively overpaid chief executives of banks and things like that. But I tell you what, most of the people who are in leadership roles in organisations, and I'm talking quite big leadership roles, they're great people. They are really great people, and they are trying to genuinely do a great job.
Yes.
And a big thing that motivates me to do what we do, and Paul, I know what you do, and KG, in this space, is really helping those good people to do very, very difficult jobs.
Yeah.
So podcasts like this, where, you know, we can chew the fat and hopefully talk about things that are real issues for people, I think is so valuable, because this is the positive side of executive leadership, you know,
absolutely.
And that far outweighs any of the negative PR that it gets in the media. So thank you for what you're doing.
Oh,
pleasure.
You know, keep it up. It's great.
Thanks.
So it's been a real privilege to be here. Thank you.
And on that note, it's really come up, hasn't it? It's become really fruity. You're right. Fruit's really come right out.
And I think my glass has a hole in it because I'm finishing mine faster than you guys.
So, slange to you both. To you both.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
Till next time.
Bye, fam.
Bye.
That's it for our show today. If you liked what you heard, if you liked our conversation, if you want to hear more, please rate us, review us, subscribe. Tell your friends, your family, your enemies, everyone you know. As always, we'd like to hear your feedback about any particular leadership topic you'd like to hear about or want us to explore. Please let us know by reaching out to us at askus@leadershipdecanted.com. That's askus@leadershipdecanted.com. You can also leave your comments and suggestions at our website at leadershipdecanted.com. We really appreciate your time and comments. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.